Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David Latulippe. Today I'll be talking with actor Keith Larson. He's in the world premiere of Jeffrey Lowe's Spending the End of the World on OK Cupid, currently at the Pear Theater in Mountain View. Joining him will be the Pear's artistic director, Betsy Cruz Craig. I'll talk with musical director Othello Jefferson and Rodney Jackson, co-founder of the San Francisco Bay Area Theater Company, about I, Too, Sing America, which honors African American artists of color with poetry, song, music, and movement. It's for 8 performances only at the Brava Theater, which begins on Valentine's Day. Preempted last week due to illness, Open Air's regular contributor and critic at large, Peter Robinson, will return to talk about and offer highlights from the Mostly British Film Festival. I'll also talk with Martin Segelke about the new name and rebranding of the San Francisco Wind Ensemble, now the San Francisco Symphony. We'll talk about their new CD and their upcoming concert this Saturday. Stay with us.
To the hip-hop of gunshots and stars.
A young woman's teeth challenge everything. About sorrow's suitcase of explanations. Not learning to hold like a bird learns his first. A faith in the sun, like a pouring, learns to take flight into the mouth of a boy in summer. The trees are prophesying, and the mountains are waiting for the long trek to the sea. And the sea waits like a lover anticipating
the kiss of 3,000 lost kisses.
The kiss of 3,000 lost kisses. The kiss of 3,000 lost kisses.
That's a brief excerpt from I, Too, Sing America, which enjoyed an award-winning and award-nominated standing-room-only summer run at the Burial Clay Theater from the Bay Area Theater Company. I, Too, Sing America is now going to be at the Brava Theater for 8 performances only through the 24th of the month of February. Joining me to talk about the work's creation and reception, our composer Othello Jefferson, who created the musical settings and the concept for the show. He's a San Francisco Conservatory of Music grad and an SF State grad as well, who's also involved now with the choir at San Francisco's Lowell High School, as well as choir director at Redwood City Sequoia High School, music director of the Redwood City Community Theater, and accompanist organist for the Ragazzi Boys Chorus, not to mention his current work with several Bay Area congregations. A very, very busy guy, and I'm so glad that he took some time to talk with us by telephone today. Hi, Othello.
Hi, David. How are you?
Boy, I'm pleased that you could even take a moment of your day to spend a little time with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
We're also joined in studio by Rodney Earl Jackson, Jr., who is artistic director and co-founder of BATCO and also a San Francisco native. Rodney made his Broadway debut in the Book of Mormon shortly after graduating from Carnegie Mellon University's School of Drama. He was last seen performing in the Temptations musical Ain't Too Proud and previously traveled North America in the first national tour of Motown the Musical. Welcome back, Rodney.
Hey, welcome.
Good to see you there. Indeed. Well, Othello, hang on a second, Othello. We're going to talk with Rodney a little bit about the co-founding of the Bay Area Theater Company You also perform in the production as well.
I do, yes. My co-founder, Marcelo Javier Pereira, and I, we created this company 4.5 years ago, a nonprofit here in the in the Bay Area, to really be a voice for our community's artists that look and breathe and, you know, think and feel the way we do, who didn't always have a space to call themselves, to have a home, to have a true, you know, location that shares their ideology as artists in one concentrated location. We found it our duty to create that space so that they can use their voices, their art, their movement, their artistry, however they want to express themselves.
You're working with 30-plus people in 30. This cast. How does that work?
Woo! It is an incredible, incredible feat. Not a challenge. I think it's awesome. These people come from all over the Bay Area, from the South Bay, the East Bay, San Francisco, the North Bay. We have some people coming across the Golden Gate Bridge. They come because they want to be here. They come. We put out a call to audition, and a very, like, low-level one, and all of this talent came about. You know, they all came out of the woodworks, and we were like, wow, where did you all come from? You must have been yearning for something like this. You're yearning to express yourselves through this kind of music, through this kind of medium, through people who look and identify and understand where you come from your life experiences as an artist and as a person who wakes up and has their coffee and goes to work every day like everybody else. I think we're doing something that is important, and I think we're doing something that people can really be proud of.
Well, let's bring Othello Jefferson into the conversation. Othello, when did you first start working with the Bay Area Theater Company?
Well, I remember Rodney and Marcelo were telling me about their great idea, and they were doing a couple shows that they were preparing to create this wonderful company. And I believe I came on to Musical Direct, one of their first productions, I think Fake Your Way to the Top. And then after that, I think I did a holiday celebration with them, and then I think a show called Passages. So
bit of a track record there.
That's connected with them over the course of a set of shows. But I've known Marcelo and Rodney and Jamie, the co-creator and director of I Do Sing America, for a long time, because I worked with them when they were younger, mm-hmm. in a Young People's Teen Musical Theater Company. And so I started working with them in Batco to help them with their shows. And it's been a wonderful experience to work with so many wonderful artists.
Well, quite a panoply of poets represented as well. How did you whittle down, and who was involved in the process of choosing what to set to music?
Well, one of the challenges was when I talked with Jamie, as we were talking about how to do this show, she had contacted me asking me about, you know, since I've supported, you know, Rodney, Marcelo, and Jamie and others for so many years, they said, do you have any ideas about a show or something that we can do to support you? And we were talking about possibly doing some sort of poetry slam with music or other aspects of arts like dance. But then we came up with the idea of I Too Sing America based on the I Too, the Langston Hughes poem. And then Jamie went about looking through and perusing different poems of persons of color, by poets of color. And we, through a lovely and wonderful, laborious process, picked some poems, and then I started setting some to music.
Fantastic. And again, I mentioned to Rodney over 30 voices in this production. That must present its own set of opportunities and, shall we say, challenges.
Oh, it's actually pretty cool, because the main thing about it is everybody's there for the wonderful opportunity to put this show together. Some people have heard about the show when we did it our first run in July.
Standing room only performances, yeah.
Yeah, and they heard about it, or if they didn't hear about it, they found out about it and wanted to audition for it. And it's just wonderful having all the people whose goal is just to make this piece come alive and to bring their own talents and abilities and create a work of art that I think that many, 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 many people will enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Including a nice new move to the Brava Theater Center with its offices and performances of Bay Area Theater Company there as well. How has that expansion been going for you?
I think that's going wonderful. It was great to be in the Burial Clay Theater, and now to be in the Brava Theater, you know, some more seats, comparatively speaking. And it's an open space that allows us to do a lot of different things, to just for the, you know, a lot of the blocking with new material and so forth and so on, to move into another space and recreate this work. Or instead of recreate, we want to create it in this new space.
Yes. I was going to say the production, earlier production, was nominated for Bay Area Dance Critics Awards following that summer run, for Izzy Awards in choreography and music, sound, as well as text. Mm-hmm. How has the production evolved or changed a bit from the summer run?
From the summer run, of course, in a different space, but also we've added an aspect of a little more dancing into it. We've added a new selection that I just finished composing called First Mango, the poem by San Francisco poet is it Vince Gotera? And not only that, I believe we are adding another beautiful duet by Chantel Williams that we're having with a tenor named Marcus, who's just an incredible addition to the cast. But she's this incredible songwriter, and she had this beautiful song. Here I am, I believe, or I think it's Here You Are. So it's a beautiful piece that we're adding.
Sounds fantastic.
Also, Othello is so modest. He composed so many songs for this choir. We have a huge choir, basically. When you have 30 performers, half of them being dancers, half of them being singers, he created like magnitudes of sound for us to like exude these famous peoples and beautiful famous people who we honor's work. Like these choral arrangements are unlike anything I've ever heard. And I think that's why so many of the artists are so attracted to it, because we love, who doesn't love to an actor using Shakespeare's text? Because the text calls for the great artistry. Othello's music calls for the great singers. And I think he doesn't do himself enough service and give himself enough credit. Incredible, masterful Othello Jefferson. What he created in I Too Sing America is unlike anything we've ever heard.
Nice little promo there for some more work to give to Rodney, huh?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, in addition to some Shakespeare, you're going to be hearing some music set to the words of Langston Hughes, Gene Toomer, Beyonce, Francis Chung, Gwendolyn Brooks, Alice Walker, and many others, with musical direction by Othello Jefferson, cast of 30-plus, choreography by Christine Chung, and it's produced and directed by Jamie Yuen Chor. 8 performances only, starting on Valentine's Day through the 24th at the Brava Theater on 24th Street in the Mission. Othello, thanks so much for talking with us by phone. Could you set up a bit of the finale? We're going to hear the part of the rehearsal of the finale. So tell us what's going to be heard on that.
Well, the one thing about this is when we're talking about the poetry and talking about how we want to put an ending, a finale to this entire show experience, we wanted to kind of create an opportunity for a simple yet catchy song that people could leave either humming or leave in their hearts, with it in their hearts as they left out of the door from the performance. And I just came up with this little melody called I Too Sing. It's simple. We just use the words of the title of the show and create a little melody, and then add some harmony to it, so it's like a big ending number that everybody can join in and sing if they like, because it's short enough with the melody. People can just be singing and humming and dancing as we leave the theater.
Sounds good. Let's have a little listen to it. And thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Rodney as well, anytime, brother, come on back.
Absolutely. You can get your tickets at sfbacco.org. Our phone number is 415-484-8566.
sfbatco.org at the Brava Theater, 24th Street in the Mission. Through the 24th. I Too Sing America, an excerpt from the rehearsal of that wonderful performance. 8 performances only, sfbatco.org for more information. At the Brava Theater, 24th Street in the Mission. Well, our next segment is going to talk about the Paratheaters production, if I can find my proper notes here. Maybe I can't. Yes, Paratheater embraces the season of sweethearts with Spending the End of the World on OK Cupid, by Bay Area playwright Jeffrey Lowe, directed by Michael Champlin. With an extinction event occurring in 12 hours, some people spend time with their friends, most spend time with their family, others apparently spend the end of the world on OK Cupid. Here to talk about the production is Keith Larson, who plays several roles in the production. Keith's 5th show at the Pear, his most recent being the SF Bay Area Theater Critics Best Circle Show nominated Girls Kill Nazis. He was also in various productions at the Exit Theater, the Los Altos Stage Company, Santa Clara Players, Broadway West, and Fremont, among many others. Keith, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you very much.
Happy to have you. Joined by Betsy Cruz Craig, who is the artistic director of the Pear Theater since 2017. She's also an instructor for theater, speech, and debate at Stratford Middle Schools. Also seen on stage in a number of productions and an award-winning director. Thank you for coming back in, Betsy.
Lovely to be here.
Well, so we've got some interesting things in the very title of the word. When did you first come across Jeffrey Lowe's rather fatalistic play, shall we say, which was written in 2016, or did it come to you?
This play, and it really isn't the world premiere at the Pear because it was commissioned for Ohlone College, and it's had a couple of staged readings as well. And, of course, the title grabs you. The play isn't, you know, it would seem it's fatalistic, but it's actually very hopeful, which is interesting. This piece, you know, when Michael Champlin and Jeffrey brought it to my attention and they were interested in working on it together and bringing it to the Pear, seemed like the perfect, it was a great for Valentine's Day in that slot, the January, February. But when I read the piece and I realized that it was, OkCupid is a dating app, right? And you're thinking, oh, so they're saying that people want to spend the end of the world hooking up. And it's not about that at all. It's about the fact that if I have one day left on this earth, I want to make a connection. I want someone to be with, to talk with, to share with, and I don't want to be alone. And so that was what really, really appealed to me, and the fact that it has a cast of 10 and actors play multiple characters. It's always a great opportunity for actors to have that. Mm-hmm. It's a fun muscle stretch on stage. So it was appealing for a lot of different reasons. Good artistic team, fantastic cast. Yeah.
I understand in an interesting coinkydink, the director of the show, Michael Champlin, met his sweetheart at a Pear Theater production.
He did. was it Northanger Abbey? Did they meet on Northanger Abbey? I believe so, and that was, gosh, I don't know how many years ago, but yes, he found his love on the Pear stage.
So you may, too, if you attend the Pear.
Exactly. It's funny, we had someone drop by it to get tickets who said he had to come and see the show because he met his girlfriend on OkCupid, so he was bringing her for a date.
So, but what brings on the extinction event that causes this whole thing? Maybe we can ask our actor Keith Larson, who plays several roles. We'll talk about
including
the roles
the prophet. The prophet. That's He's right. The one that prophesizes the extinction.
What is your prophecy?
Oh, my prophecy is that the vanishing is coming, and my character is very blustery, bombastic. I channel my inner Alex Jones to play him. And he's the kind of guy that, what's the saying, that the clock is always right, you know, twice a day. This is a guy who skips days as far as being correct. But this one time he gets it right with his prophecy and says that half of the world's population is going to disappear. And then subsequently it happens. And then he has gone on to say that the rest of humanity is also going to disappear. To live your lives accordingly.
Okay, well, it's a good time for end of the world prophecies.
Yeah,
I told you it was a timely production, right?
Indeed. So tell us about the other roles you play other than the prophet.
Other than the prophet, I play a very uppity coffee shop barista who I have seen this guy before at my local coffee shop. I play a person who is new to the online dating scene, and he's not only awkward on the online dating scene, I think he would be awkward on virtually any scene. And then I play a guy who is not so much worried about making a connection with someone, but he would rather just have someone to accompany him while he watches his favorite sports teams play their favorite games that he's recorded. And that's actually a character that I most closely identify with. Being a rabid San Francisco Giants fan, I could watch Game 7 of the 2014 World Series over and over and over again.
Wow. Not my kind of a date. Sorry. We're not a match.
We're not going to be compatible. You are going to swipe left on me big time.
So are there other roles that you play? No.
Those are it. Okay. Yeah, I think that's it.
I think that's it, too. Yeah. I was trying to think.
Well, get it together before you open it, ladies. Well, oh, yeah. I forgot about this role.
Yeah, we've been doing this for 2 weeks. Yes. I think I know all my roles.
And there are several actors that play multiple roles as well.
That's right.
Your colleagues.
Yeah, they play. Yeah, we call it the ensemble, and they not only serve to transition from scene to scene, but it also gives the audience a vivid cross section of the kinds of people who populate the online dating universe.
Hmm. Slices of life.
And again, not a fatalistic show, but one that offers some hope towards companionship in some way or another.
Yeah. There are two main relationships that we look at, and the real central one isn't a romantic relationship. It's more about a man and a woman becoming friends, which is something that the playwright was interested in exploring on stage, because we sort of assume if you've got a male and female in two lead roles that they're either going to end up killing each other or loving each other. And in this, they basically help each other get through to the end of the world. But I'm not going to give any spoilers as to whether that prophecy ends up being true or not.
All right. Maybe we can't talk about this on the air either. What is your both experiences with online dating apps?
You know, it's really funny. We did a talk back the other day, and one of the actress's fathers was in the audience, and he was asking how many of the actors in the show had actually used OkCupid, and nobody would say. And so I turned it back on him and said, how about you? And he wouldn't answer. So I personally, I've been in shows with Keith, and so I know he has used. I let it go on air, Keith. I know he's familiar with them. I personally have never used it, but Keith, why don't you talk about your experiences?
Thanks. Yeah, I used them a few years back. I started out on Tinder, and the reputation around using Tinder, I think, is well earned. I'll leave it at that. And then I found
there are a lot of errs out there. There's
but the one that doesn't have an err is Bumble that I used. And that one I liked a lot more because it gave more say over the conversation to the woman, where once you've established a connection, the connection can only go so long as she responds to you first.
Okay. All right. Well,
love that one.
There's no leather or whips involved at this point of the relationship.
Not on that.
Yeah. The day's still young.
Always a dangerous question for an actor, Keith. What's coming up after this show for you?
I'm going to take some time off. It's been well earned. I've been doing shows back to back for the last year plus, and just going to be taking time raising my two boys. Their age is 15 and 11. One's doing JV baseball. The other one is doing basketball and hip-hop dance.
That's full-time work in itself, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And then we'll get back after it in the fall.
Nice. It's Keith Larson starring in one of the many players in the show. I'm missing the title of the show. Here we go.
The End of the World on OkCupid.
Thank you. I've already moved on to the pair of seasons, 2019-20 season. I wanted Betsy Cruz Craig talk a little bit, give us a little snapshot of the current season.
Wow, we just announced it a couple hours ago, which is pretty exciting.
Wow.
It's
off the presses.
Yeah, it's
you heard
really,
it here first.
She announced it to me in the car.
you're not supposed to say that. I think that the pair is sort of known for presenting an eclectic mix of productions. And I think this season we really have accomplished putting together something I'm quite proud to present.
Reading is over, I'll say, that's for sure.
We begin with Oscar Wilde's An Ideal Husband, which is also frighteningly relevant in terms of the discussions of political corruption, etc. And then I'm so happy to announce that we're doing Lynn Nottage's Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Sweat, which is, you know, an examination of a group of people going through, in the early 80s, recession and how economic crisis affects them. And it's a fantastic play. Then we're doing Fresh Produce, which is our offering of original play readings, which we brought on this past summer. Then we're doing a co-pro with a company called Wandering Bark Theater Company out of New York, a piece, one-woman show called You/Emma, which is sort of a postmodernist modern look at Madame Bovary.
That's being billed as holiday audiences will enjoy. Makes it enticing to holiday
Because it's in December. Because it's in December.
Something to do in December.
Exactly. Something to do in December. And then we are presenting A Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which is a piece that we've been looking at the pair for a long time. We're pretty excited to present that.
Winner of 5 Tonys, including Best Play, 7 Olivier Awards.
Exactly.
As well.
Prior to that, we're doing Alan Ackbourn's farce, which isn't done a lot, called Taking Steps, which I'm thrilled about. It's the conceit of this production is it's set in the round, and it's supposed to be in a three-story house, but the stories are brought down so you see the physical activity of the actors climbing stairs when there are no stairs, and it's very fast-paced, furious, and a fantastic farce by Alan Ackbourn. We're bringing back Pair Slices, our examination of, you know, 8-10-minute original plays, which is a pair audience favorite, and then we're ending our season with a favorite show of mine, Side by Side by Sondheim.
Nice. Yes. And that not only includes music by Sondheim, but by Leonard Bernstein, Marion Richard Rogers, Julie Stein as well. It's kind of a panoply and love letter to Stephen Sondheim.
Exactly.
Fantastic. All of that and more are at thepair.org. Keith Larson, Betsy Cruz-Craig, thank you so much for coming in. And we're going to go out with a little REM to celebrate spending the end of the world on OK Cupid through the 17th at the Pair Theater, thepair.org. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Slice and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Locking in, uniform and book burning, blood letting, every motive escalate, automotive incinerate. Light a candle, light a motor, step down, watching heel crush, crush, uh-oh. This means no fear, cavalier, renegade, steer clear, a tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Leonard Bernstein, a perfect opportunity to segue into my next segment with conductor Martin Segelka, who is here fresh off the plane from Florida to talk about the San Francisco Wind Symphonies concert at Hoover Middle School this coming Saturday, and to talk about their new CD. Concert Saturday, which includes some of the music that we're going to be hearing in the background here from the first suite in E-flat by Gustav Holst. Martin is the founding artistic director and conductor of the San Francisco Wind Ensemble, now the San Francisco Symphony. He serves as assistant conductor with the Pinellas Park Civic Orchestra and works as music professor and administrator at the University of South Florida, St. Pete. He's held several positions as music director and conductor and has taught at universities in California, New York, Minnesota, Illinois, and Germany. As I mentioned, fresh off the plane, thank you, Martin, for taking the time directly en route.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be back.
And how are things down in St. Pete, other than warmer than here?
They are now finally a lot warmer than here. It's beautiful. It's in the mid-70s right now. But we had a cold snap, too, when, you know, up north they had, what, minus 30. We were down in the 40s, so Floridians were shivering with their hats on and their gloves on. It might be a funny picture for Northerners, but it got a little chilly too, and we're waiting for the Gulf to warm up to go back scuba diving. So,
well, I would love to join you for that. I just got certified this past
please,
year.
Please come on out. It'd be wonderful.
I'd love it.
I'll reserve a boat for you.
Looking for opportunities.
Great.
So we just had a little hint of the whole suite in E flat, which is part of the program this coming Saturday, which includes music by Mendelssohn, Hindemith, and Rodrigo as well. But I'd like to dwell a little bit on Gustav Holst, who I know as a bandsman myself, growing up in the public schools of Connecticut and going through the band program. Holst, once I heard those Holst suite, it's like, wow, this is amazing, amazing music. Gustav Holst must have grown up with the military bands of Britain as part of his background.
A little bit. And, you know, one of those stylistic elements is when you read those words in the subtitle military band, you're always thinking of a certain way of articulating, a certain way of sounding and things like that, especially when you keep in mind that this was composed in the very early 1900s. That being said, yes, military bands, they were probably the only wind band, wind ensemble kind of things that Gustav Holst was exposed to. But keep in mind, at that time, the instruments were shaped very differently. Let's just look at the bell of a trombone today versus the very small bell of a trombone that he had at that time. And just things like that, where if you contextualize, it's actually a very different sound. It's a very beautiful sound. It's a very mellow, very, very blended, beautiful, soft sound, actually, that it's making. And the manuscript version that was unearthed from which we're actually going to perform this particular concert brings back some of this chamber ensemble feel, and I'm actually very excited about this whole particular program that we're putting together. There is a chamber music emphasis, and the reason is that we're now moving to a different venue for this particular concert. We're at Hoover Middle School, which is the first time ever that we get to experience this beautiful auditorium, but it is a little bit smaller, and those people that have been with us for a while and know us a little bit know that on occasion we bring out rather large forces, 70, sometimes 80 people on stage, and rather heavy music. So for this particular room challenge, we chose to go a slightly different route, slightly smaller ensemble, slightly more of a chamber music aspect. Not to say that the music isn't complex, but just in terms of its timbres and its overall conceptualization, that's what we're aiming for.
Mm-hmm. And a move to the Hoover Middle School, which is on 14th Avenue near Hawk Hill, out in the avenues between Rivera and Santiago. Why a move to there, and does this seem like a good permanent location for you guys now?
Permanent, we don't know yet. I mean, anything is possible. First of all, I would like to say a big shout out and a great, great, great thank you to the wonderful, wonderful students at Aragon High School and to the wonderful band boosters there who have hosted us for a while now. There were many wonderful collaborations that we were able to do with those great students there. And, you know, after a while, the idea has always been we wanted to share and we wanted to collaborate with as many Bay Area organizations as possible. So that being said, if you have a permanent location, it kind of sort of takes that away. And, you know, we're experiencing a new venue now, and unfortunately there is not a collaborative aspect to this particular concert with the middle schoolers. It was simply just logistically not possible yet for this particular time. Will that happen in the future? That is up to their musical leadership, so, and I'm not going to make those decisions for them. It would be wonderful to do so. It would be wonderful to be back. It would be wonderful to continue to explore and become maybe a little bit more of a nomad around the Bay Area and just, you know, just share these experiences with more ensembles and more directors and hopefully acquire new audiences that way too. But like I said, nothing is set in stone. We haven't announced the new session or the new season yet. We are negotiating with a lot of very, very interesting and very promising players. But until it's set in stone, I have a vow of silence. So, so please stay tuned. There will be something on social media and our website soon.
All right.
But I'm not allowed to talk about it yet.
I should mention that is sfwindsymphony.org is that website where you can learn about this coming Saturday's concert. I mentioned the Holst Suite in E-flat. How did the rest of the program come together? The Mendelssohn Notturno. Tell me about that piece.
Yes. Another one where the original manuscript of this small chamber piece of just 13 wind instruments was lost for a while, and Mendelssohn himself then at some point rescored the piece for a larger, again, military band, and that is now known as the Overture for Winds, and there are several arrangements, transcriptions, and publications of that particular version. And it wasn't until, oh boy, I'm going to make up a number of about 25 years or so, that the actual score of the Notturno was finally resurfacing, and now we can enjoy the beautiful original chamber version. But when it first was published by Boosey, it was as a larger wind ensemble or band piece that Mendelssohn had not originally conceived but kind of sort of made an arrangement for. So we're very glad to, again, for this particular chamber emphasis concert, go back to more of a chamber music root. And when you think about Mendelssohn, okay, we're talking 1800s, then we're looking at the Holst, very early 1900s, shortly followed by Hindemith also. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking 1926, so it is a little bit of an older program. Again, those who know us know that we love to do those world premieres. We love to do the cutting-edge new sounds. But again, for this particular program, something was riding me to say, well, let's go back to the roots and maybe just take a little bit more of a melodious chamber musical approach. Not to say that the Hindemith, even after almost 100 years, does not still sound very, very contemporary. It certainly does.
Mm-hmm. But written specifically for winds, as was Rodrigo's Adagio for Wind Instruments, another work I'm not familiar with.
It's a beautiful work, and this is going back in terms of credits to Robert Boudreau, who created the American Wind Symphony, and that is a project that was housed on a boat and was going up and down the Mississippi River every summer. And every summer, musicians from all over the country came together to create this ad hoc ensemble, and he was actually commissioning some of the world's leading composers for this particular occasion, for this particular ensemble. Please write something. And Rodrigo was one of them, who heard the call and created this absolutely stunning, very free in certain passages, very soloistic piece interspersed with more rapid, more vigorous sections. It's a very, very emotional, very, very gorgeous piece. And it's been on my list of pieces to do for quite a while. And if you think that, you know, when I founded the ensemble in 2012, that I still haven't done it, shame on me. It's about time. It's so, so expressive, so emotional. I'm very, very excited to see what all of our beautiful soloists are going to do with it. It's going to be great.
Mm-hmm. That's the concert this coming Saturday of the San Francisco Wind Symphony out at Hoover Auditorium on 14th Ave. Information at sfsymphony.org. Where you can also find some more information about a new CD that came out. Tell us about the creation of this. Where was it recorded? What did you decide to include?
Indeed, yes. Just as a quick side note, I know it sounds similar, and we wish we were the San Francisco Symphony, but we are the San Francisco Wind Symphony.
Did I say something?
I said
Wind Symphony.
Otherwise, I might get an angry call from somebody very high up with that other very wonderful orchestra here. Yes, we are very, very excited in June of 2018, we had a great weekend of very intense recording sessions. We had a wonderful producer, Brad Ginevra, and a wonderful recording engineer, Bruce Leek. They came out and spent the weekend with us and made us sound the best they possibly could and the best we could possibly sound too, I guess. And finally, I mean, those things take a while, and we were talking with several recording companies, and Mark Moret with Mark Custom Recordings actually took us on, and in December, right in time for the Christmas season, the new album was released. The title is Bridges, and it has very international, more so our usual repertoire, you could probably say. Five wonderful pieces. We're very, very proud of it, and please buy it. Please come by, come to the concert and buy it there. Go on Amazon, buy it there. It's a very, very beautiful recording. Some world premiere recordings, pieces that have never been recorded before, such as Rolf Rudin's very impressive memorial to the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Bobby Chastain's Metanoia, which is Bobby Chastain is a Bay Area composer, and again, it's a world premiere recording of that piece, and some other music that has been recorded before, but is had not been recorded here in the United States. So we're very, very proud of it and very happy with it.
Speaking of one of those tracks on the new CD, I really was taken by the work by Alphen. Tell us about that, the Velvicken Dance.
Yes, it's actually, that is the only transcription on the entire CD. You know my fable for mostly original compositions, but for this particular one we made an exception just because it is so well done. Hugo Alphen actually composed an opera called Bergerkungen, the Mountain King, and out of that there is this short little ballet dance scene. It is very, very animated, and Jose Schinz actually created this particular transcription, and it's just such a wonderful feature, especially for our wonderful clarinetists Taylor and Robert, and they did an absolutely wonderful job. And well, let's take a listen.
That's from the new CD of the SF Wind Symphony, Velvicken Dance of Hugo Alphen. Oops, that's not it at all.
I was gonna say, we didn't feature a singer.
That's the wrong track. Let's do this one. Judy Garland coming up later. There we go.
There they play the clarinet.
Martin Zagoka, again, thanks for taking some time today.
Thank you so much.
SFWindSymphony.org for more information about the concert coming up this Saturday at the Hoover Auditorium, 14th Avenue. Music of Mendelssohn, Holst, Rodrigo, and Hindemith. And on the CD, Velvicken's Dance. The San Francisco Wind Symphony's new CD, Velvicken Dance, Hugo Alphen. Wonderful music on that CD. And do try to catch the SF Symphony this Saturday if you can. Well worth your time. More incredible band music from the Brits and Rule Britannia, an appropriate introduction to my friend and fellow contributor to Open Air, Peter Robinson, who was absent last week due to illness. We're happy that we're still in time to hear highlights of the Mostly British Film Festival, which gets underway on the 14th. Hi, Peter. Welcome back.
Hi, David. Yeah, good to be here. And I always smile nowadays when I hear Rule Britannia, because I'm not sure if there's anything left of the British Empire, but as Brexit approaches, the United Kingdom is also beginning to shrink.
I think the sun is setting on the British Empire. The sun never used to set.
It's a slow set, and you probably don't need any sunscreen, because it looks to me as though the moon has taken over. Well, I always say there's nothing like a great night out at the movies, but there is something better. There's a great week out at the movies, and this is what you will find at the Mostly British Film Festival, which opens on February the 14th. The movies are screened at the Vogue Theatre, one of the great historic theatres here in San Francisco, and they embrace the English-speaking world. So when we use the word mostly British, we're looking across the globe. And while a movie is a visual treat, I think one of the great things about the Mostly British is that you also get to use your ears, because you hear different accents from India, from Australia, from Ireland, from Scotland. And the way these pronunciations blend into the speaking of what I'm going to call the Queen's English, I think makes this an even more rich type of festival. Now, speaking of accents, one of the movies, because we combine history with tragedy, with comedy, with mystery, documentary, docudrama, but one of the ones I want to speak about briefly is called The King's Speech. And this was a classic film where Colin Firth won a number of awards. It's set in 1937 in the UK at the time of the abdication crisis. And this is when Wallace Simpson had caught the eye of the Duke of Windsor. He is forced to abdicate. And his brother, the future George VI, is brought into the picture. Now, this is still the days of radio broadcasting of the BBC. And what George VI has to do is to give the opening speech. But George VI has a stammer. He has a very bad stutter. And the movie is interesting in the sense it shows how that was dealt with in those days, which included the horrific practice of putting marbles in a person's mouth. But they then find a Australian coach, played by Geoffrey Rush, and the King's Speech is a really interesting piece of history. It's an interesting piece of what I'm going to call speech therapy. And above all, it's a piece of drama that leads up to the Second World War, because the other thing about the Duke of Windsor is that he had strong Nazi sympathies. So here's a great movie, Colin Firth, called The King's Speech, and it's one of the classic examples that the Mostly British Film Festival has a wide range of happenings. It's also preceded by the 1954 version of Richard III, where Laurence Olivier not only directed the play and appeared as Richard in the movie, but it was screened in VistaVision, and VistaVision was one of the new breakthroughs that happened in the early 50s. It takes Technicolor beyond Technicolor. You're not in 3D. So, of course, when he comes out with that great speech, "Now is the winter of our discontent," you are really brought into the mind of King Richard. Now, those are just a couple of examples of what I call the English section. Others include the classic Four Weddings and a Funeral. There's a tribute through Michael Caine to My Generation, which looks at England in the 1960s. And then we move literally around the globe. I mentioned Australia, a movie called The Songkeepers, set in the original Aboriginal part of Australia, and I think is a really informative understanding of how people communicate in Central Australia, an eye-opening revelation. We go back to the UK, but this time up to Scotland, and a movie called Moondogs, set largely on the road from Glasgow to the Shetland Isles, again brings us to the world of Scotland. Now, in the past, when we've had Scottish movies, we did have a request for subtitles. But I've got to add, the way some of the Scottish cab drivers speak meant that the subtitles veered on the offensive with the use of certain words at the beginning of each sentence. So we don't have them all subtitled. The Moondogs is a very touching story, and you'll see some great scenery as the story progresses. I mentioned India, Shalom Bollywood, the untold story of the Indian cinema, is another example of literally a movie from around the English-speaking world. And I think you'll have plenty to talk about as the whole program progresses.
You should mention the opening night show as well, the White Crow with Ralph Fiennes on the great Russian ballet legend Rudolf Nureyev.
That's correct. And there's some great dancing sequences, but it's also a political story. The opening Crow is about Nureyev's defection. He defected in Paris. We have a dramatic shot at the airport as he makes his decision. And the script is by the British playwright David Hare. So again, you've got a good combination of both ballet, you've got music, you've got acting, you've got drama. And this, too, is one of the other examples.
And speaking of historical figures you mentioned earlier, Looking for Lenin will be Roger Appleton's contribution, the documentary on the famous Liverpudlian, John Lennon.
Yeah, Liverpool is my hometown. So, hey, Mac, how you doing back there? Back on the back streets of Liverpool. You're going to talk about Lennon, are you? Okay, let's hear the truth. Get the accent right and don't mess around. There you go.
You still have it, Peter, I guess.
And I think it really is a good story where John Lennon came from and how he grew up. A very informative documentary. And again, another example of the variety of genre. I mentioned history, Richard III, King's Speech, documentaries like Looking for Lennon, and some of the feature films that may not have made it necessarily to the big circuit. So to some extent, it's a selective choice of movies for people who are real movie buffs. Now, let me mention two other ones. One from Ireland called Black 47, and this takes us back to Ireland at the time of the famine. The year is 1847. It's the story of an uprising, and again, it's where history blends with fiction. Some really important facts are correctly depicted in this story, and one of the closing movies, which is the closing event, is also based on an uprising, and the movie is called Peterloo. The name is given to a massacre. It took place in England, in Manchester, in 1819, and it's a highly dramatic story because what people were campaigning against was the need for political reform. And the reason we use the word massacre is the Tory government brought in the cavalry, they brought in the troops, they brought in militia on horseback, and they suppressed what essentially in Manchester was a working-class peaceful demonstration. Now, to show you how long political reform can take under the English or British constitution, the Reform Act would not be passed until 1832. So there you have the massacre in 1819. It takes almost another 12 years for things to begin to change. And of course, needless to say, we open our programme tonight with Rule Britannia. I've got to say, the Peterloo Massacre has a roaring version of Rule Britannia, but also, let's remember it, God Save the Queen. So, really, if you want a full week out at the movies, you want to see something from Australia, something from Ireland, something from Scotland, and, of course, back home to the UK, you get 25 different movies in 1 week. and this is all taking place at one of my favourite, it's a classic historic movie house on Sacramento Street, the Vogue Theatre. And the title of the whole week is called the Mostly British Film Festival, which you can reach at mostlybritish.org. And I guarantee you, you will find something there that will make you think. Movies help you see, in this case they help you hear, see the different accents, hear the different voices, and enjoy a real week out at the movies with friends.
MostlyBritish.org for the Mostly British Film Festival at the Vogue Theatre on Sacramento Street. Lots of great stuff. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, David. Good to be here.
Well, also in a little bit more Gustav Holst in the background to let you know some other things that are happening here in the Bay Area. This coming tonight, actually, Friday and Saturday at 8, the San Francisco Symphony is performing works by Steve Mackey, his Portals, Scenes, and Celebrations, a SF Symphony Commission and a world premiere written with Michael Dilson Thomas in mind. Prokofiev's first violin concerto with Gil Shaham as soloist, and the amazing Tchaikovsky Symphony No. 4, which was immortalized in the award-winning Keeping Score educational informational DVDs that you can still get from SFS Media. Again, Michael Tilson Thomas on the podium, guest violinist Gil Shaham. San Francisco Ballet continues its season with Program 2, which opened earlier this week, Kaleidoscope, music of Mozart, to choreography of George Balanchine. Beethoven's Appassionata Sonata receives a San Francisco Ballet premiere to choreography by Benjamin Millipede, and Justin Peck choreographs Hurry Up, We're Dreaming, to music of Anthony Gonzalez, Jan Gonzalez, Bradley Lehner, and Justin Melden Johnson. Program 3 also begins, and that on Valentine's Day, called In Space and Time. The fifth season is a work by Carl Jenkins, choreographed by Helgi Thomason. Snowblind, with various composers, including Amy Beach, Philip Feeney, Arthur Foote, and Arvo Pärt, to choreography by Kathy Marston, and Etudes with music by Risage after Zerny and choreographed by Harold Lander. SFBallet.org for more information for those, SFSymphony.org, SFWindSymphony.org for Martin Segelke and their concert on Saturday. Lots of great stuff coming up. You've been listening to Open Air here on KLW San Francisco. My thanks to Neil Swinkles for producing the show. Our shows are archived at kalw.org. Join me next week when I'll talk with playwright Gary Graves and director John Zweifler about the world premiere of the Kafka-esque political comedy Wonderland. It's going to be at Central Works in Berkeley. Also on that program, we'll talk with choreographer Katie Faulkner about the world premiere of the piece Divining by her Little Seismic Dance Company. And San Francisco Ballet's principal dancers, speaking of which, earlier, Joe Walsh will be here. He's performing in that Justin Peck work I talked about, Hurry Up, We're Dreaming. That's next week on Open Air. Hope you can be with us. And if you've got a segment suggestion, by all means, send me an email, david@kalw.org. Thanks again for listening. Show's archived at kalw.org.